Chapter 3. The Wild Wood.
Mole had long wanted to make the acquaintance of Badger. She seemed, by all accounts, to be such an important personage and, though rarely visible, to make her unseen influence felt by everybody about the place. But whenever Mole mentioned her wish to the Water Rat, she always found herself put off.
"It's all right," Rat would say. "Badger'll turn up someday or other. She's always turning up. And then I'll introduce you, the best of women. But you must not only take her as you find her, but when you find her."
"Couldn't you ask her here for dinner or something?"
said Mole.
"She wouldn't come," replied the Rat simply. "Badger hates society and invitations and dinner and all that sort of thing."
"Well then, supposing we go and call on her?"
suggested Mole.
"Oh, I'm sure she wouldn't like that at all," said Rat, quite alarmed. "She's so very private, she'd be sure to be offended. I've never even ventured to call on her at her own home myself, though I know her so well. Besides, we can't. It's quite out of the question, because she lives in the very middle of the Wild Wood."
"Well, supposing she does,"
said Mole.
"You told me the Wild Wood was all right, you know."
"Oh, I know, so it is,"
replied Rat, evasively.
"But I think we won't go there just now. Not just yet. It's a long way, and she wouldn't be at home at this time of year, anyhow. And she'll be along someday if you wait quietly."
Mole had to be content with this. But Badger never came along. And every day brought its amusements. And it was not till summer was long over, and cold and frost and miry ways kept them much indoors, and the swollen river raced past outside their windows with a speed that mocked at boating of any sort or kind, that she found her thoughts dwelling again with much persistence on the solitary grey mistress, who lived her own life by herself in her hole in the middle of the Wild Wood. In the wintertime, Rat slept a great deal, retiring early and rising late. During her short day, she sometimes scribbled poetry or did other small domestic jobs about the house. And, of course, there were always animals dropping in for a chat. And consequently, there was a good deal of storytelling and comparing notes on the past summer and all its doings. Such a rich chapter it had been when one came to look back on it all, with illustrations so numerous and so very highly coloured. The pageant of the riverbank had marched steadily along, unfolding itself in scene pictures that succeeded each other in stately procession. Purple Loosestrife arrived early, shaking luxuriant tangled locks along the edge of the mirror whence its own face laughed back at it. Willow Herb, tender and wistful, like a pink sunset cloud, was not slow to follow. Comfrey, the purple hand in hand with the white, crept forth to take its place in line. And at last, one morning, the diffident and delaying Dog Rose stepped delicately on the stage, and one knew, as if string music had announced it in stately chords that strayed into a gavotte, that June at last was here. One member of the company was still awaited, the shepherd boy for the nymphs to woo, the knight for whom the ladies waited at the window, the prince that was to kiss the sleeping summer back to life and love. But when Meadow Sweet, debonair and odorous in amber jerkin, moved graciously to her place in the group, then the play was ready to begin. And what a play it had been! Drowsy animals, snug in their holes while wind and rain were battering at their doors, recalled still, keen mornings an hour before sunrise, when the white mist, as yet undispersed, clung closely along the surface of the water. Then, The shock of the early plunge, the scamper along the bank, and the radiant transformation of earth, air, and water, when suddenly the sun was with them again, and grey was gold, and colour was born, and sprang out of the earth once more. They recalled the languorous siesta of hot midday, deep in the green undergrowth. The sun striking through tiny golden shafts and spots, the boating and bathing of the afternoon, the rambles along dusty lanes and through yellow cornfields, and the long, cool evening at last, when so many threads were gathered up, so many friendships rounded, and so many adventures planned for the morrow. There was plenty to talk about on those short winter days when the animals found themselves round the fire. Still, Mole had a good deal of spare time on her hands. And so, one afternoon, when Rat, in her armchair before the blaze, was alternately dozing and trying over rhymes that wouldn't fit, she formed the resolution to go out by herself and explore the wild wood. And perhaps strike up an acquaintance with Mistress Badger. It was a cold, still afternoon with a hard, steely sky overhead when she slipped out of the warm parlour into the open air. The country lay bare and entirely leafless around her, and she thought that she had never seen so far and so intimately into the insides of things as on that winter day, when nature was deep in her annual slumber and seemed to have kicked the clothes off. Copses, dells, quarries, and all hidden places, which had been mysterious mines for exploration in leafy summer, now exposed themselves and their secrets pathetically, and seemed to ask her to overlook their shabby poverty for a while, till they could riot in rich masquerade as before, and trick and entice her with the old deceptions. It was pitiful in a way, and yet cheering, even exhilarating. She was glad that she liked the country undecorated, hard, and stripped of its finery. She had got down to the bare bones of it, and they were fine and strong and simple. She did not want the warm clover and the play of seeding grasses. The screens of quickset, the billowy drapery of beech and elm, seemed best away. And with great cheerfulness of spirit, she pushed on towards the wild wood, which lay before her low and threatening, like a black reef in some still southern sea. There was nothing to alarm her at first entry. Twigs crackled under her feet, logs tripped her, funguses on stumps resembled caricatures and startled her for the moment by their likeness to something familiar and far away. But that was all fun and exciting. It led her on, and she penetrated to where the light was less, and trees crouched nearer and nearer, and holes made ugly mouths at her on either side. Everything was very still now. The dusk advanced on her steadily, rapidly, gathering in behind and before, and the light seemed to be draining away like floodwater. Then the faces began. It was over her shoulder and indistinctly that she first thought she saw a face. A little, evil, wedge-shaped face looking at her from a hole. When she turned and confronted it, the thing had vanished. She quickened her pace, telling herself cheerfully not to begin imagining things, or there would be simply no end to it. She passed another hole, and another, and then, yes, certainly, a little narrow face with hard eyes had flashed up for an instant from a hole and was gone. She hesitated, braced herself up for an effort and strode on. Then suddenly, as if it had been so all the time, every hole, far and near, and there were hundreds of them, seemed to possess its face, coming and going rapidly, all fixing on her glances of malice and hatred, all hard-eyed and evil and sharp. If she could only get away from the holes in the banks, she thought, there would be no more faces. She swung off the path and plunged into the untrodden places of the wood. Then the whistling began. Very faint and shrill it was, and far behind her when first she heard it. But somehow it made her hurry forward. Then, still very faint and shrill, it sounded far ahead of her and made her hesitate and want to go back. As she halted in indecision, it broke out on either side and seemed to be caught up and passed on throughout the whole length of the wood to its farthest limit. They were up and alert and ready, evidently, whoever they were. And she was alone and unarmed and far from any help. And the night was closing in. Then the pattering began. She thought it was only falling leaves at first, so slight and delicate was the sound of it. Then as it grew, it took a regular rhythm, and she knew it for nothing else but the pat, pat, pat of little feet, still a very long way off. Was it in front or behind? It seemed to be first one, and then the other, then both. It grew. And it multiplied, till from every quarter as she listened anxiously, leaning this way and that, it seemed to be closing in on her. As she stood still to hearken, a rabbit came running hard towards her through the trees. She waited, expecting it to slacken pace or to swerve from her into a different course. Instead, the animal almost brushed her as it dashed past, her face set and hard, her eyes staring.
"Get out of this, you fool! Get out!"
Mole heard her mutter as she swung round a stump and disappeared down a friendly burrow. The pattering increased till it sounded like a sudden hail on the dry leaf carpet spread around her. The whole wood seemed running now, running hard, hunting, chasing, closing in round something or somebody. In panic, she began to run too, aimlessly. She knew not whither. She ran up against things. She fell over things and into things. She darted under things and dodged round things. At last, she took refuge in the deep, dark hollow of an old beech tree, which offered shelter, concealment, perhaps even safety. But who could tell? Anyhow, she was too tired to run any further, and could only snuggle down into the dry leaves which had drifted into the hollow and hope she was safe for a time. And as she lay there, panting and trembling, and listened to the whistlings and the patterings outside, she knew it at last, in all its fullness. That dread thing which other little dwellers in field and hedgerow had encountered here and known as their darkest moment. That thing which Rat had vainly tried to shield her from. The terror of the wild wood. Meantime, Rat, warm and comfortable, dozed by her fireside. Her paper of half-finished verses slipped from her knee, her head fell back, her mouth opened, and she wandered by the verdant banks of dream rivers. Then a coal slipped, the fire crackled and sent up a spurt of flame, and she woke with a start. Remembering what she had been engaged upon, she reached down to the floor for her verses, pored over them for a minute, and then looked round for Mole to ask her if she knew a good rhyme for something or other. But Mole was not there. She listened for a time. The house seemed very quiet. Then she called.
Molly? Molly!
Several times, and, receiving no answer, got up and went out into the hall. Mole's straw boater hat was missing from its accustomed peg. Her galoshes, which always lay by the umbrella stand, were also gone. Rat left the house and carefully examined the muddy surface of the ground outside, hoping to find Mole's tracks. There they were, sure enough. The galoshes were new, just bought for the winter, and the pimples on their soles were fresh and sharp. She could see the imprints of them in the mud, running along, straight and purposeful, leading direct to the wild wood. Rat looked very grave and stood in deep thought for a minute or two. Then she re-entered the house, strapped a belt round her waist, shoved a brace of pistols into it, took up a stout cudgel that stood in a corner of the hall, and set off for the wild wood at a smart pace. It was already getting towards dusk when she reached the first fringe of trees and plunged without hesitation into the wood, looking anxiously on either side for any sign of her friend. Here and there, wicked little faces popped out of holes, but vanished immediately at the sight of the valorous animal, her pistols and the great ugly cudgel in her grasp, and the whistling and pattering which she had heard quite plainly on her first entry died away and ceased, and all was very still. She made her way determinedly through the length of the wood to its furthest edge. Then, forsaking all paths, she set herself to traverse it, laboriously working over the whole ground, and all the time calling out cheerfully,
"Molly, Molly, dear Molly, where are you? It's me, it's old Rat."
She had patiently hunted through the wood for an hour or more, when at last, to her joy, she heard a little answering cry. Guiding herself by the sound, she made her way through the gathering darkness to the foot of an old beech tree with a hole in it, and from out of the hole came a feeble voice saying,
"Ratty, is that really you?"
Rat crept into the hollow, and there she found Mole, exhausted and still trembling.
"Oh, Rat,"
she cried,
"I've been so frightened you can't think."
"Oh, I quite understand, dear,"
said Rat soothingly.
"You shouldn't really have gone and done it, Mole. I did my best to keep you from it. We riverbankers, we hardly ever come here by ourselves. If we have to come, we come in couples, at least. Then we're generally all right. Besides, there are 100 things one has to know, which we understand all about, and you don't as yet. I mean, passwords and signs and sayings which have power and effect, and plants you carry in your pocket, and verses you speak, and dodges and tricks you practice. All simple enough when you know them, but they've got to be known if you're small, or you'll find yourself in trouble. Of course, if you were badger or otter, it would be quite another matter."
"Surely brave Lady Toad wouldn't mind coming here by herself, would she?"
inquired Mole.
"Toady,"
said Rat, laughing heartily.
"Oh, she wouldn't show her face here alone, not for a whole hatful of golden guineas, Toad wouldn't."
Mole was greatly cheered by the sound of Rat's careless laughter, as well as by the sight of her stick and her gleaming pistols, and she stopped shivering and began to feel bolder and more herself again.
"Now then,"
said Rat presently,
"we really must pull ourselves together and make a start for home while there's still a little light left. It will never do to spend the night here, you understand. Too cold, for one thing."
"Dear Ratty,"
said poor Mole,
"I'm dreadfully sorry, but I'm simply dead beat, and that's a solid fact. You must let me rest here a while longer and get my strength back if I'm to get home at all.
Oh, all right, said the good-natured rat. Rest away. It's pretty nearly pitch dark now, anyhow. There ought to be a bit of moon later.
So Mole got well into the dry leaves and stretched herself out, and presently dropped off into sleep, though of a broken and troubled sort, while Rat covered herself up too, as best she might for warmth, and lay patiently waiting with a pistol in her paw. When at last Mole woke up, much refreshed and in her usual spirits, Rat said,
Now then, I'll just take a look outside and see if everything's quiet, then we really must be off.
She went to the entrance of their retreat and put her head out. Then Mole heard her saying quietly to herself,
Hello, hello, here is a go.
What's up, Ratty?
Asked Mole.
Snow is up,
replied Rat briefly.
Or rather down. It's snowing hard.
Mole came and crouched beside her, and looking out, saw the wood that had been so dreadful to her in quite a changed aspect. Holes, hollows, pools, pitfalls, and other black menaces to the wayfarer were vanishing fast, and a gleaming carpet of fairy was springing up everywhere that looked too delicate to be trodden upon by rough feet. A fine powder filled the air and caressed the cheek with a tingle in its touch, and the black boles of the trees showed up in a light that seemed to come from below.
Well, well, it can't be helped, said Rat, after pondering. We must make a start and take our chance, I suppose. The worst of it is, I don't exactly know where we are, and now this snow makes everything look so very different.
It did, indeed. Mole would not have known that it was the same wood. However, they set out bravely and took the line that seemed most promising, holding on to each other and pretending, with invincible cheerfulness, that they recognised an old friend in every fresh tree that grimly and silently greeted them, or saw openings, gaps, or paths with a familiar turn in them in the monotony of white space and black tree trunks that refused to vary. An hour or two later, they had lost all count of time, they pulled up, dispirited, weary, and hopelessly at sea, and sat down on a fallen tree trunk to recover their breath and consider what was to be done. They were aching with fatigue and bruised with tumbles. They had fallen into several holes and got wet through. The snow was getting so deep that they could hardly drag their little legs through it, and the trees were thicker and more like each other than ever. There seemed to be no end to this wood, and no beginning, and no difference in it, and, worst of all, no way out.
We can't sit here very long, said Rat. We shall have to make another push for it, or do something or other. The cold is too awful for anything, and the snow will soon be too deep for us to wade through.
She peered about her and considered.
Look here,
she went on.
This is what occurs to me. There's a sort of dell down here in front of us, where the ground seems all hilly and humpy and hummocky. We'll make our way down into that and try and find some sort of shelter or cave or hole with a dry floor to it, out of the snow and the wind, and there we'll have a good rest before we try again, for we're both of us pretty dead beat. Besides, the snow may leave off, or something may turn up.
So, once more they got on their feet and struggled down into the dell, where they hunted about for a cave, or some corner that was dry, and a protection from the keen wind and the whirling snow. They were investigating one of the hummocky bits Rat had spoken of, when suddenly, Mole tripped up and fell forward on her face with a squeal.
Oh! Oh! Oh, my leg!
She cried.
Oh, my poor shin!
And she sat up on the snow and nursed her leg in both her front paws.
Poor old mole,
said Rat kindly.
You don't seem to be having much luck today, do you? Let's have a look at the leg.
Oh, yes,
she went on, going down on her knees to look.
You've cut your shin, sure enough. Wait till I get at my handkerchief and tie it up for you.
Oh, I must have tripped over a hidden branch or a stump,
said Mole miserably.
Oh, my, oh my.
It's a very clean cut,
said Rat, examining it again attentively.
That was never done by a branch or a stump. Looks as if it was made by a sharp edge of something in metal. Funny.
She pondered a while and examined the humps and slopes that surrounded them.
Well, never mind what done it,
said Mole, forgetting her grammar in her pain.
It hurts just the same, whatever done it.
But Rat, after carefully tying up the leg with her handkerchief, had left her and was busy scraping in the snow. She scratched and shoveled and explored, all four legs working busily, while Mole waited impatiently, remarking at intervals,
Oh, come on, Rat!
Suddenly, Rat cried,
Hooray!
And then,
Hooray, 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 hooray!
And fell to executing a feeble jig in the snow.
What have you found, Ratty?
Asked Mole, still nursing her leg.
Come and see,
said the delighted Rat as she jigged on. Mole hobbled up to the spot and had a good look.
Well,
she said at last, slowly.
I see it right enough. Seen the same sort of thing before, lots of times. Familiar object, I call it. A door scraper. Well, what of it? Why dance jigs around a door scraper?
But don't you see what it means, you dull-witted animal?
Cried Rat impatiently.
Of course I see what it means,
replied Mole.
It simply means that some very careless and forgetful person has left his or her door scraper lying about in the middle of the wild wood, just where it's sure to trip everybody up. Very thoughtless of them, I call it. When I get home, I shall go and complain about it to somebody or other. See if I don't.
Oh dear,
cried Rat in despair at her obtuseness.
Here, stop arguing and come and scrape.
And she set to work again and made the snow fly in all directions around her. After some further toil, her efforts were rewarded, and a very shabby doormat lay exposed to view.
There! What did I tell you?
Exclaimed Rat in great triumph.
Absolutely nothing whatever,
replied Mole with perfect truthfulness.
Well now,
she went on.
You seem to have found another piece of domestic litter, done for and thrown away, and I suppose you're perfectly happy. Better go ahead and dance your jig round that if you've got to and get it over. And then perhaps we can go on and not waste any more time over rubbish heaps. Can we eat a doormat? Or sleep under a doormat? Or sit on a doormat and sledge home over the snow on it, you exasperating rodent?
Do you mean to say,
cried the excited Rat,
that this doormat doesn't tell you anything?
Really, Rat,
said Mole quite pettishly.
I think we'd had enough of this folly. Who ever heard of a doormat telling anyone anything? They simply don't do it. They're not that sort at all. Doormats know their place.
Now look here, you feeble-minded moorhen,
replied Rat, really angry.
This must stop. Not another word, but scrape. Scrape and scratch and dig and hunt around, especially on the sides of the hummocks, if you want to sleep dry and warm tonight, for it's our last chance.
Rat attacked the snowbank beside them with ardour, probing with her cudgel everywhere and then digging with fury. And Mole scraped busily too, more to oblige Rat than for any other reason, for her opinion was that her friend was getting light-headed. Some 10 minutes' hard work, and the point of Rat's cudgel struck something that sounded hollow. She worked till she could get a paw through and feel, then called Mole to come and help her. Hard at it went the two animals, till at last the result of their labours stood full in view of the astonished and hitherto incredulous Mole. In the side of what had seemed to be a snowbank stood a solid-looking little door, painted a dark green. An iron bell pull hung by the side, and below it, on a small brass plate, neatly engraved in square, capital letters, they could read by the aid of moonlight, "Mistress Badger." Mole fell backwards on the snow from sheer surprise and delight.
"Rat!"
she cried in penitence.
"You're a wonder. A real wonder, that's what you are. I see it all now. You argued it out, step by step, in that wise head of yours, from the very moment that I fell and cut my shin. And you looked at the cut, and at once your majestic mind said to itself, 'Door scraper.' And then you turned to and found the very door scraper that done it. Did you stop there? No. Some people would have been quite satisfied, but not you. Your intellect went on working. 'Let me only just find a doormat,' says you to yourself. 'And my theory is proved.' And of course you found your doormat. You're so clever, I believe you could find anything you liked. 'Now,' says you, 'that door exists, as plain as if I saw it. There's nothing else remains to be done but to find it.' Well, I've read about that sort of thing in books, but I've never come across it before in real life. You ought to go where you'll be properly appreciated. You're simply wasted here among us simpletons. If I only had your head, Ratty."
"But as you haven't,"
interrupted Rat rather unkindly,
"I suppose you're going to sit on the snow all night and talk? Get up at once and hang on to that bell pull you see there and ring hard as you can, while I hammer."
While Rat attacked the door with her stick, Mole sprang up at the bell pull, clutched it and swung there, both feet well off the ground. And from quite a long way off, they could faintly hear a deep-toned bell respond.